What up, Long Beach? We've got a Basketball Jones this week on the show where we keep you up to date on everything happening with the Long Beach schools, their sports teams, and our community at large. We are the 562.org. It's the tripod. I'm JJ. He's Mike. And he's Tyler.
The show is part of our partnership with the Long Beach Post, as is everything else at the 562.org. And we've got a special guest coming up in Paul Westhead, who is basically basketball's Forrest Gump. The dude coached Magic and Kareem to an NBA championship with the Lakers, then had Magic force him out of that job so that his assistant coach, Pat Riley, who he hired, could take over coach Diana Taurasi to a WNBA championship. Also has the fascinating stat of being the coach of the Long Beach Jam, an ABA team in Long Beach, for one game, which they did win. So he did go 1-0. But Coach Westhead has got a new book out, an autobiography, and so very excited. Definitely stick around and check out that interview with Coach.
Our second NBA championship to be on What Up Long Beach, because obviously we've had Jordan Bell on the show. I mean, come on.
you gotta have JB for a little bit of a different perspective. We are really excited right now, cautiously optimistic at the return of sports, hopefully, fingers crossed, to our neck of the woods. So please, if you're excited about sports coming back, head to the 562.org, smash the subscribe button within an inch of its life, save a little bit for the next person, but please sign up on our Patreon page, support us, make sure that we can keep bringing you Long Beach sports coverage when high school and college sports hopefully come back in the near future. We will talk more about this on the show.
Yeah, I mean, Long Beach State men's and women's basketball, quote-unquote, practicing this week. They have been derailed multiple times. Their best laid plans have been changed again and again and again. And finally, they are in small groups. They're not allowed to meet as a full team. They're doing groups of 10 or less, but they are out there. They're on campus. They're working out. They're trying to get back into shape so that they can then move to basketball activities outside and then eventually get to basketball activities back inside, preparing for a possible season that could start as early as the first week of December. So the clock is ticking for NCAA basketball teams, the men and women at Long Beach doing it right now. And I was talking to a men's head coach, Dan Munson, about what he's doing, and he was saying he's got to take it slow. They want to take it slow with the pandemic. They want to take it slow with the fitness of their players. I mean, he made a great point. These guys are probably in the worst shape of their basketball lives right now. So he's really going to implement whatever he implements very slowly. And I thought that was a good point, because if we are going to rush, I think that's where you find yourselves in trouble, right? Take it slow. Take it slow.
I think that's going to be a theme, especially, to be honest with you, probably more so when we talk about football with games potentially, you know, just 2.5 months away. All of the high school football coaches I've talked about have made that point. Like, it's a long ways between conditioning workouts and, I mean, they're not even allowed to lift weights yet. So, you know, you've got to be able to do that and get into shape before you can really get out there and be doing full contact stuff. But that's a great point on basketball as well. And, you know, JJ, you did a great job staying on top of this story, but, you know, all the Long Beach State student athletes had to go back into like a full lockdown quarantine for a couple weeks before they, because of some positive cases on campus, before they could start these workouts up. So there probably was like a nice ramp up. I mean, we've talked to a couple players where they were doing, you know, kind of prison workouts in their dorm rooms, but they're also running around campus, and then you have to go full shutdown. No, you're locked in your room for 2 weeks. So, yeah, they probably are in the worst shape they've ever been in as they get ready to start basically from scratch as a basketball team.
Yeah, we have a lot of ramping up to do, and at this point, we're just like dipping our toe in the water, and so at some point, we're gonna have to swim the 200 free, and we're just not, you know, it's like we really got to incrementally get there. But I think every time there's a setback, you know, there's these positive tests that had to push things back 2 weeks and slow everything down. That's gonna make everyone a little more cautious, and it's gonna make things move at a slower pace, and it's just. It is tough because you are reliant not just on yourself, your teammates, but the entire campus community. Because if there are spikes in cases, even if the basketball teams are doing everything right and, you know, distancing and keeping to themselves and following the guidelines, they could get shut down through no faults of their own. So it's just a very tricky dance we're all doing as a community.
It's also got to be extremely frustrating for some of these student athletes to see other student athletes that they're supposed to be competing against, you know, in the near future, knock on wood, getting to do more or having more leeway Maybe it's because they're in a different state, or maybe it's because they're in a different county, or whatever it is. You know, if you're a Long Beach State basketball player right now and you're running lines 10 feet away from everyone, and you see somebody online, you know, shooting with their teammates, it's got to be frustrating. It's got to drive you crazy to think, man, we are already behind so many other teams. You could even compare what high school football teams are able to do right now compared to what college basketball teams are able to do. The rules are changing so much that it has to grind on.
Well, I mean, I asked Andy Fee, the athletic director, I asked him the question, like, why are all high school sports teams been able to work out for the last 3 months, 4 months in the city of Long Beach safely? You know, they've had, I believe there was one case that required a quarantine at Jordan High School. But other than that, and I'm just going to throw out here, by the way, that this is going to be a really tricky area for us as sports writers to talk about, because we're obviously not going to name kids for having contracted the virus. And I'm not really even comfortable naming the team. But I know there was one case that required a quarantine at Jordan. But other than that, everything's been good, you know, for the school district. And yet here we are into mid-October before the university's kids basically are allowed to be outside together, you know, running laps. I mean, I think there's being cautious, and I think there's overdoing it. And honestly, none of us really know what the difference is between those things. It's sort of a personal decision we all have to make. But in my opinion, they've been overly cautious there. I don't understand why the women's soccer team cannot do a socially distanced running workout outside. I don't understand why from May they haven't been able to do that. And so I do hope that this goes smoothly, as Tyler said, and makes that ramp up more of a smooth process and less of the two steps forward, one steps back, like we've been seeing at the university.
Right. No, I think I agree with that, Mike. I mean, it's we're not the experts that can draw the line on what's overly cautious and what's prudent, but you know, it is weird, right, to every Saturday college football all across the country, and then you're telling me that a basketball team can't run laps outside 8 feet apart. You know, it's weird. Like, it's hard to square that circle for everyone. But at the same time, if you look at what's going on in other parts of the country, Dan Mullen wanted his stadium to be filled because right. He said that's why they lost. And then the Florida football team has a big outbreak on their team. And then now Nick Saban tests positive. So it's not like it's going great for the people that have flung the doors open. There's definitely challenges. So it's all about working to find that line. But I think for listeners, for viewers, for people that are sports fans that just want things to go well, anytime there's progress like this, rather than being like, well, why is just say, hey, we're moving forward. And that's the best thing we can do, is just collectively start moving forward. None of this went at the pace we were hoping for back in March. Here we are in October. So let's just, you know, take the wins where we can get them, as lowercase as those W's may be.
I may have promised my daughter we would not have to cancel her October birthday party, you know, like 4 months ago, when it was just like, yeah, cases are under control and every outbreaks, like, we're good. We're definitely going to have your birthday party. So that's been a fun conversation.
Well, like we mentioned at the top of the show, we do have a special guest coming on, Coach Paul Westhead. This is really great, because having the Lakers beating the Heat on Sunday to win that NBA championship, 17th greatest damn franchise in the history of sports. And then we get to bring on the head coach of the 1980 Los Angeles Lakers NBA champions. That is just really cool. So Westhead, if you don't know, kind of invented what we now consider basketball. That up-tempo style, shooting the ball before the shot clock has single digits on it. He's going to talk about how he wanted his teams to shoot when there was like 4 seconds into the shot clock, 4 or 5 seconds. That is crazy.
He was the first coach
trying to convince somebody in 1980, no, we're going to want to shoot it. And then we're going to want to shoot it again and again and again.
I mentioned some of the other Forrest Gump stuff about his career that really is just unbelievable, and we get into all of that with him. But yes, as JJ mentioned, he was literally the first coach to say the 7 seconds or less offense, which obviously Mike D'Antoni made a huge part of the NBA offensive culture. But he was at LMU, yes, LMU, the same LMU that is now, and was leading the NCAA in scoring in the early 80s. I mean, you know, in the mid 80s. Like, this is a really unique dude, and I had a great time talking to him. Before we get to the interview, though, we've got to shout out Naples Rib Company. sponsor of everything we do at the 562.org, sponsor of this podcast, really the sponsor of our hearts, guys, if we're being completely honest with you. Today
and our tummies.
We're recording on Thursday this week, which is Naples Rib Company Day for my wife and I. We already put the order in. I'm going early this evening to pick up I get the brisket sandwich. You know, she loves the cornbread. I mean, she could honestly just eat the cornbread for dinner, but she's going to get some chicken, I think. And I don't know. I look forward to it all day Thursday. I'll be hungry. I'm going to deny myself lunch, you know, really make sure I'm ravenously ready for this Naples Rib Company. But our friends at Naples Rib Company want to make sure you know they are open for outdoor dining as well as takeout. They have a great setup out there. Tyler did a story about what they've done to innovate and stay relevant, which you can see at the 562.org. But definitely get down to Naples Rib Company and continue to support a business that supports everyone else in the city.
So without further ado, we're going to bring on our special guest, Coach Paul Westhead. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it. How are you doing out there?
I'm doing fine.
Perfect. Good, good. I always want to ask coaches who have spent their entire lives with basketball, like a game on Sunday, right? The NBA Finals game. How do you watch that? Are you pulling for a team? Are you pulling for players? Or are you just breaking down tendencies like a coach?
Yeah, probably a little bit of both. But, you know, being a former Laker coach, deep down, I wanted them to see the win one more. So I was kind of rooting for them. I didn't expect that kind of a blowout so early. They were the better team, though. Here's the thing about the NBA basketball. In a seven-game series, the better team always wins. So you can lose a couple, but you're not going to lose enough.
That was the mantra. JJ and I are both Lakers fans. I'm repeating that to myself. You know, they lost the first game in the first couple of series, and I kept telling myself the same thing. Well, you know, they're better than the Blazers, you know, so over seven games, it evens out. Coach, we're so happy to have you on. You are, a true basketball coach, every level, you know, both genders. You coach the Lakers, as you mentioned, but also a very successful college coach on the men's and the women's side. You've got a book out. Where can people get the book, and you know, what do you want to let people know about that?
Well, the book title is The Speed Game, and it's available on Amazon.com right now. It's going to come out again. The University of Nebraska Press is the one who published it. It'll come out again November 1st on other outlets, but right now Amazon.com has The Speed Game, and it's my attempt to address a lot of things. One, in the basketball world, I want to let coaches know what this speed game, what this fast break really entailed, and if you think about doing it, what you're getting into. It's simple to see, difficult to do.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of a basketball nerd. Very fortunate to have kind of come up under Frank Burleson and some other great basketball writers in Southern California. And you know, you're famous for the system, which you know, fast break transition based offense. That you must now look at basketball and feel pretty good about yourself, right? I mean, I mean, the idea of the 7 seconds or less shot is obviously now more so three-point oriented, right, than necessarily where you are positioning your players. But that pace and spread, get the shot up quick offense has sort of become the dominant, you know, dominant system really in pro basketball, college basketball, and everything. So do you feel a little bit like the father or the grandfather of a movement, or do you wish you were just 30 years old and starting out now, or how do you feel about the evolution of the game?
Well, I'd like to be 30 years old. We can start with that. You know, it's interesting. I see signs of the fast break that, you know, that I put in 35, 40 years ago, but it really isn't the same. I wouldn't want to take credit for it because, ironically, from my point of view, it's slower than the way I played. You know, like you said, the 7 seconds, we wanted to shoot within 4 to 5 seconds. You know, we wow. Really wanted to get after it. And here is the real difference. You can see some of the fast break basketball in any NBA game you look at. If you 48 minutes, you're going to see a half a dozen nice fast breaks. I'll give you an example. outlet pass to Anthony Davis after Miami scores, and they throw that lead pass to the basket. He catches it with no defender around, and he dunks the ball.
Right.
Well, we did that 100 times a game. I want to be very clear, and that's one of the things I say in the book. This is not your normal, you know, fast break basketball. If you're going to do what I do, you have to run the ball every possession. So envision 100 possessions on offense in a game. You need to sprint the ball 100 times. And therein lies the rub. The rub is if you can get your players to do it, like I did in some of my teams, like Loyola Marymount, it's great. And if you can't, you get fired.
Right.
And I, you know, I've had 20 coaching jobs, and I was fired in, I think, 14 of them. The book kind of explains not the greatness of it only, but the pitfalls.
Yeah, was it difficult to convince people that it was going to work? I mean, it must have been so revolutionary for you to just say, shoot the ball within the first 4 or 5 seconds of the shot clock. Did you have to convince people?
Yes, you do. And the people you're talking about are your players. So I'll give you a scenario. You get a new team and you show up and you say, all right, guys, you know, one of the things we're going to do this season, we're going to run. We're going to be a fast break team. What do you think? And if you have 12 players in a room, they all raise their hand. Yes, yes. We finally have a coach who gets it, like plays like we want to play. Well, about 6 practices in, if you ask the same question out of the 12, you might get 2 hands that raise up. And then 10 days in, there'll be a meeting, players only meeting. And they're going to sabotage what you're doing. So that's the normal bill of fare for a fair. And here's what happens. Coaches are smart. They're trying to run this fast break. It looked pretty good, but now it's slowing down. And now the players seem not to be able to get there in time. So you back off because they want you to back off. And you start putting in plays. And once you start putting in the flex offense or any kind of play, then the fast break is over. Try it next year, but it's because it's not going to happen this season.
So, I mean, it's interesting. And to give people a little bit more history, as I mentioned, JJ and I are, you know, Laker diehards. So very excited to get to talk to you. You won an NBA championship, you know, Magic Johnson's rookie year as the head coach of the Lakers with Magic and Kareem. To some extent, you look at those two guys and think, well, that's sort of a perfect personnel to run exactly what you're talking about, right? You know, Magic with the athleticism, but also the court vision, and then Kareem being an unusually athletic center. But as you just said, you did not coach the Lakers for 15 years, right? you won an NBA championship, but I think just like a year later, you were out. Is that sort of the dynamic you're talking about, that it's difficult to kind of get a buy-in from guys who are making 100 times as much money as you and are, you know, superstars and everything?
Yeah, although my experience with the Lakers, even though it ended unceremoniously and being fired, it was
Paul, how close to it was the title? It was the next season, right? I mean, you literally won an NBA championship and got fired a year later.
Well, we won this championship in Philadelphia not by coincidence, in my hometown of Philadelphia in game 6. And that's the one, if you recall, Magic Johnson had to play center.
Yes.
Green was injured and Magic went on to score 42 points. And we won the NBA championship on the road in Philly against Dr. J and company.
Yes, some would say pretty good coaching job, right? Like had you done that in Portland, you get a 20-year contract after that.
Funny, I did get a new contract at the end of the season, and therein really is the problem in my head. If you had a new contract and if you had a great team, why did you try to make them run more? And, you know, that's what I did. And ultimately, it didn't work. they, in their own ways, turned it down and said, we want to run more methodical. But it was a great team, and I enjoyed being with
you
Magic
mentioned,
and Kareem.
Yeah, you mentioned Kareem. What was he like? What was it like to work with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Kareem was, for me, a delight. He was a very quiet, introspective person at that time. I just stumbled in the right way with him. By that I mean, I did not try to overpower him with my basketball expertise. I just kind of was there. And I remember the first practice, I was an assistant coach when I first arrived, and Jack McKinney said, would you go down and work with Kareem for a few minutes? So I went down the other end and said, hi. He said, hi. So I passed him the ball into the low post 20 times, and he took 20 turnaround sky hooks, and he made all 20 of them. Threw the ball back to me, and he said, thank you very much. And I went down to McKinney. I said, hell, this is easy. You know, I like coaching on this team. But I did find out that if Kareem wanted you to say something, he would speak first. You know, he chose his words very carefully. So we became friendly, you know, not buddy buddies and going out to, and having dinner together, but we had an understanding of one another. And I can say when it came to the end and I got fired and you go home and you don't know what to do, you're distraught. I will add, if you get fired the first time, you think it's personal.
Right.
When you get fired five or six or seven times, you know it's not personal. But the time I went home and I'm with my wife and my kids and I get a call, no cell phones, and this is a call at the house, and I pick it up, and it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he says, Coach, I'm sorry this happened. I really didn't – I wasn't really a part of what happened, but I'm sorry, and thank you for everything. So wow. It says it all.
Is it – I mean, you're obviously still – you know, we're talking NBA now, right? And this is – you know, you're talking about the Lakers. This is, you know, 40 years after you were coaching them. So you're obviously still a basketball fan and still love the sport. But I can only imagine – you know, JJ and I are both journalists, which is probably the only profession that would rival coaching in terms of job insecurity, okay?
Yeah, I love more than you have. I can tell you that right now. I got fired more times than you two did together.
Well, I got a little time to go here, Coach. You know, I mean, we've been fired a couple of times, but we're only in our mid-30s still. So, you know, we're
– All right.
Okay. But, you know, I guess my question is, you know, for us, JJ and I might have people we're bitter against or people where, you know, there's a little bit of gossip between the two of us about those people. For you, I mean, we're talking about Magic Johnson. We're talking about the coach that replaced you for the Lakers is Pat Riley. Like, the names that, you know, are sort of around these stories for you are inescapable names, right? So what's that like as a basketball guy that – you're watching the Lakers beat the Heat. They've got Pat Riley. You know, they're showing clips of Magic Johnson and Pat Riley this whole time. Is that difficult? Or for you, it's just sort of, it's all history. And it's, like you said, it's the business, I guess.
Yeah, well, it went in phases for me. As I indicated, when I was first fired from the Lakers, I was devastated. It's hard to go home and share dinner with your family because they're all looking at you in tears like, Dad, what did you do? But as things get perspective, after you get some other jobs and you realize what really happened, I had a separate piece with the Lakers. Jerry Buss, for example, he fired me, but he was the best owner I ever had because he was committed to getting the best players available. So if you're a coach of a professional team and your owner is going to provide players that you need, and he's not going to, you know, say, well, I don't want to spend that much money.
Right.
Can't we do it for less?
Yeah.
That was never Jerry Buss's approach. He said, if we're going to win, we have to have the best players. So he was committed to that. So I'm happy for that.
I want to ask you about that as a coach who's seen as much as you have, because I think there's, you know, for people who love this sport, there's always sort of a tension between X's and O's and talent, right? And you just said it. I mean, if you're talking about the NBA in a best of seven game series, you better have the best players, right? And there was some stuff in the media about, oh, Coach Spo knows LeBron better than everyone. And JJ and I are sitting here going, so what? You know, I mean, it's great that you know the guy, but he's still going to be able to do the things he's able to do. You, though, I feel like the system in LMU, where you take a mid-major basketball team and you guys lead the NCAA in scoring, you and Jerry Tarkanian and a very few other guys can point to accomplishments and say, hey, that's coaching. Okay, LMU was not the most talented team in the NCAA when you led the country in scoring. What do you think about that tension or about the balance of coaching and systems versus, you know, the Jimmys and the Joes versus X's and the O's, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it changes on different levels. In the NBA level, you need to have your approach, your system, your X's and O's, your plays or your defensive strategy, but you need to be much more cognizant of your team, of your players, of their personality, of their contracts, of their agents. And right. To be honest with you, in reflection, when I came to the Lakers, I was an experienced basketball coach. You know, I was a head coach at LaSalle University for 9 years. So I knew the deal, but I did not know the agent player contract deal. I was immune to all that. And I think ultimately that hurt me at times. I couldn't realize that players wanted things and wanted to do things a certain way for their own personal advantage.
Right.
So, but in the college game, at LMU, it's more, you're the coach. If you have a style of play and you can convince your players to play that style, they'll buy in, they'll do it, or they won't, but it won't be a whole series of personal reasons.
It'll be a little bit more of a direct reason why they're not buying in or whatever. Right. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, coach, this is just too hard. But yeah. If I could think of a single example of fast break basketball at LMU, it happened in Long Beach and not the NCAA playoffs that we eventually played. It happened. We played Long Beach State in their whatever old gymnasium.
In the gold mine. In the shoebox over there. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. Okay. So we play them and during the first half, we're up 25. Okay?
Okay.
And there have been a half a dozen games that I would say the officiating wasn't its best, but up 25, you don't complain too much. But my starting center, Mark Armstrong, fouled out in the first half. But that's okay. Just keep that aside. In the second half, we're down 25.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's a 50-point switch, folks. All right? At the end of the game, we're down one. So that's, I'll round it off. That's a 75-point switch. Up 20, yeah. Down 25, up 25. I mean, catch up 25 to get
right.
It.
So,
we have the ball. Hank gathers, makes a power move to the basket with 2 seconds to go, and he gets fouled. So the shot doesn't go in because they hit him pretty good. And I have to take it. Yeah, so he's got a free throw to tie the game and another free throw to win the game. He misses the first. He misses the second, and we lose by 1 point.
Oh, man. Okay?
All right, so now that I gave you that, but the score, and you guys can check it out, it had to be in the 120, 130s.
Right.
After the game, I'm just walking around waiting for the players to change and get on our bus to go home. We're going to have a week off because it's semester break. They're going to have exams, so I'm not going to see them for a week. One of the TV guys who was around, you'll probably remember his name. His last name was Arnold.
Yeah.
He came to me and he said, Coach, I watched the game. He said, you're going to be okay this year. You're going to have a good team. I looked at him. I said, we are now 3-3. 3 wins, 3 losses. And we just lost like very, very bad. Lose. Catch it. Make up 50 points and you still lose the game. Okay, so we take the week off. Then we won the next 25 games in a row.
Wow.
So,
pretty good.
Yeah. So once you get the running game, you can, that was easy because you just go fast and you just beat people and they get tired and they literally give up and say, no more.
So Coach, I wrote a book called Basketball in Long Beach, sort of a history of the sport in this city. And, you know, obviously we've had some great coaches come through Long Beach State with Tark and Lute Olson and Tex Winter and some of these guys. But there's a chapter in the book that's dedicated to ABA, WNBA, Pro-Am. You know, there's been so many different teams that have come through the city. And I'm a little bit of a nerd for that aspect of the history. You have a very special place in the history. Because you coached the Long Beach Jam, an ABA team in 2003, for a grand total of 1 game, and then got hired away by the Orlando Magic, which I think everyone understands you leaving the Long Beach Jam for the Magic. But can you give us a snapshot of that story and how all that went down? I have to imagine that's your shortest tenure of any job that you've had is the 1 game.
Yeah, some of the jobs I got fired on, it wasn't much more than 1 game. But I was coaching at Long Beach Jam. I mean, I really enjoyed it. We spent a couple weeks practicing, getting ready, and our first game is on the road in Juarez, Mexico.
Wow!
So we have to trek down to El Paso and then go across the bridge and the river into Juarez. We had a shoot around and we were in an old beat up bus and traffic was horrendous. And it took us like 2 hours to get to the shoot around. So I'm saying this is going to be a tough go. We went in that night and we just ran our fast break. It's like as good as I've seen. I mean, if you're only going to coach 1 game, coach this game, because our players were on fire. And after the game, I get a call. In fact, one of my players had a cell phone. He said, hey, Warren Legari, the agent, my agent wants to talk to you. I got on and Warren said, can you come to Orlando tomorrow? I said, well, I think I can. And so I didn't know I had the job yet. So I flew down. I met with the new head coach was Johnny Davis, who just a little background. It's in the season already. And Doc Rivers just got fired by the Magic. And Johnny Davis took over. So I have dinner with Johnny Davis, and he says, well, Coach, you know, I haven't met you yet, but I know people that know you, and I made some calls. And some people think you're a genius.
You said, and some other people think.
Some people think you're crazy. So he looked me right in the eye. This is before we ever had even an appetizer. And he said, which one is it? And I said, my life is on the line right now. So, Paul, be truthful. I said, well, John, probably a little bit of both. And he said, you're hired.
That's fair.
My one coaching job at the Long Beach Jam, but I enjoyed that time.
Yeah, well, you have the highest winning percentage in the city's basketball history. I mean, you can't get any better than 1-0, you know?
You can't.
Well, just to mention one more time, the book is The Speed Game, available on Amazon. Before we let you go, Coach, you mentioned it earlier. You won that NBA title in your hometown of Philadelphia in 1980, one of the greatest finals we've ever seen because we're Laker fans. But for you, that just must have been an incredible moment. And after watching all of the Lakers celebrating this week and all the different ways that they were celebrating, I got to ask you, How do you celebrate that NBA title? I mean, did you just grab the Larry O'Brien and just start walking down the street and showing everybody who told you you'd never make it?
Yeah, well, it's funny because in Philadelphia, I mean, I had played there at St. Joseph's and I coached at LaSalle for 9 years. But, you know, I was almost like the returning question mark. Like, who is this Paul Westhead that can come into our city and win a championship? He wasn't that good. And I wanted to reply, well, when I was here at LaSalle and playing, I didn't have Kareem and Magic. So, yes, I can have to. But I can remember that night. I went back to the hotel. We had a few friends there, not many because we didn't have any tickets for them. And we went to a local diner by the airport, the Melrose Diner, and had scrapple and eggs. So if you're not from Philadelphia, you don't know what scrapple is, but it's a classic thing that you have sometimes late at night. And that was our celebration. We got on the plane the next day, flew commercial, and the door opened as we arrived of the plane, and in walked Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Wow. So
he was there to greet us. He was the first player to enter that plane and wish us the best.
That's wow. Awesome. I wanted to ask one other question, Coach. You are, yeah. I believe, still the – I know you were the first. I think you're still the only coach to win an NBA and a WNBA championship. I'm looking at the career timeline. It's fascinating. You go Long Beach GM, Orlando Magic, Phoenix Mercury, you win a WNBA championship, the Sonics and the Thunder, and then the University of Oregon for the women's basketball team. I feel like, and you know, pardon me if I'm being ageist or whatever, but I feel like when I talk to a lot of basketball coaches your age or even basketball writers, sometimes I think there's a little bit of a, maybe like a snobbery towards the women's game, but you know, I've heard coaches sort of look down on the women's game. And you obviously are someone who 2005, I mean, the WNBA ratings are going up through the roof now, but this is 15 years ago. You really committed and went and, you know, you go and win a championship there. What was it that you liked about the women's game? Why did you think it was important to not sort of say, no, I'm not going to coach, you know, a WNBA team or an NCAA women's team? Like, what was it that that your mindset was, I guess?
Well, just to give a little historical perspective, I won the NBA championship with the Lakers in 1980, and I thought, well, you know, wherever I go and coach, you know, good things are going to happen again. Well, it took 28 years to win the next championship. So my message to myself and my message even to the current Lakers coaches and staff, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think, you know. Yeah. You never know when you're right. Gonna win another one. So don't say, hey, well, this is the start of a 5-year run or, you know, enjoy this one.
Yeah. But
when I went to the Phoenix Mercury, I had never coached women before. When I arrived to sign my deal at the airport was Diana Taurasi to greet me. And, you know, that's like Michael Jordan being there.
Right.
Yeah.
I can tell you in all the jobs that I've had in the past, no player ever was there to meet me at the plane.
Right.
And we're driving to the press conference and she said, Coach, I know a little bit about you. I know you like the fast break. She said, whatever you did to the guys and the drills that you gave them, give them to us. Don't water anything down. And I looked at it and said, okay. Yeah. I felt like saying, you don't know what you're asking for.
Right.
But, you know, the next year, we won a championship in Detroit on the road. And there are some comparisons. Kareem and Magic. Well, now I have Diana Taurasi and Cappy Pondexter and Penny Taylor. Right. I mean, so if you have the very best players and you put them in a scheme and they buy in, you're probably going to win.
Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff, Coach. Thank you so much. One more time, The Speed Game, available on Amazon. Best of luck with the book. Best of luck with everything else. And when everything gets back to normal, you got to come down to Long Beach and we'll hang out and watch a game together.
I'm a Long Beach fan. Yeah, thank you.
Talking all that Lakers has me want to talk more Lakers. That's what we've been doing all week, is just talking about all the memories that we've had as Lake Show fans. Obviously, some of them great, others not so great. We suffered, guys. We earned this. We earned this championship. You know what I mean? Through all the Rudy Tomjanovich years, we really earned this.
Robert Sacre can't hurt you anymore, JJ.
Watching the finals reminded me that I've watched finals games in like so many different states. Like I can remember watching what was that, 2010, the one in Orlando. I was watching that from my family's house in Virginia.
2010 was in Boston, I believe.
Right.
And I know that because I was staying with Shar and I were staying with our friend Connor. So we were in New York watching the Lakers win the championship in Boston. We decided to watch it in his apartment because we didn't feel like fighting our way through Soho after they won the game. But yeah, my wife sent me a picture of me celebrating with my fists in the air after the 2010 win, and then me and our son celebrating after the Lakers won on Sunday. And I have to say that was up there for me. The Shaq Kobe, the 2000-2001 championships and that three-peat are obviously, because we were in high school, like that will always be huge in my mind. But just because of how crazy everything else is in life and everything, that this might be my favorite season as a Lakers fan, to be honest with you. I just, those games were so exciting through the playoffs. They were so well coached. I love the way they played defense in the closeout game. I mean, it was genuinely like I felt actually inspired by it. You know what I mean? It was like everything's miserable, but if you work hard, good things can happen. I just totally tore the living room up with my kids celebrating. I don't know. That might be up at the top of the list for me. What are your guys' favorite Laker memories?
Man, I mean, obviously, you know, I go back to the kind of the Kobe Shaq years, you know, when I was from elementary school into middle school, you know, kind of formative years.
Just
for
a
your
baby.
For your fandom, you know what I mean? Just a total baby. And I mean, I remember like going to Staples to watch the games, the finals games when they were, you know, in Philly or in Indiana or whatever. Just going and watching it on the Jumbotron, and that was super awesome to be in the arena for that. I remember, for whatever reason, I can vividly remember doing a middle school chorus recital and like waiting to go on stage, but then like getting score updates about the finals game against the Sixers or against the Nets. I think it was the year we played the Nets, and it was like knowing that we were going to win. So that was super awesome, obviously. But there was one playoff game, the one playoff game against the Kings, the Tim Donaghy game, it was game six, right? Against the, yep, against the King at Staples, the one that was super controversial that they
JJ
won.
And JJ and I made fun of our friend Brian, who's a huge Kings fan. I make fun of him all the time because he first tried to bring that up, like, well, you know, they cheated. And then it's just been merciless for 20 years since then. I'm just like, yeah, you tell yourself whatever you want to tell yourself.
Yeah. And I was at that game. So that was pretty special.
I didn't know you were at that game.
Yeah, I was up in like the rafters.
Well, obviously, I mean.
Yeah, but I was somehow able to get tickets to that, so I went with my mom and enjoyed it. That was a crazy game. What an atmosphere it was! So that's certainly one of the memories. I have my ticket stub somewhere.
Would you guys agree that like, you obviously when you go to a game you want to win. But I feel like if you go to a game and you get a game that you can reference that everyone's heard of, I feel like that's a win, right? Like, even if the Lakers had lost that, if it was a notorious cheating scandal game, but they lost it, it'd be like, at least when you tell people that, it's not like I went to some random, like I went to a Clippers Suns game in 1994. No one cares. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right, but if you went to the game where Altuve wouldn't rip his jersey off because he didn't want everyone to find the buzzer that was attached to him, that would be noteworthy. You wouldn't be like,
reference.
I'm so happy to be there for that game, but you'd be like, oh, remember the game where Altuve had to cover the evidence of him cheating? I was there for that.
You could lie and be like, I thought it was weird from the top of the stairs that he wasn't letting him rip his jersey off.
You didn't notice.
One of the biggest surprises of this job is actually that we've gotten tickets to both Lakers and Dodger games because of our job. Guys in sports like sports. I had no idea. Shout out to Simon Grieve, who sent me to my first Laker game as an adult when it was just like, yep, got these tickets. Can't use them. You want them? And I was like, is this what it's like to be grown up? It's amazing. The little things, guys. It's the little things.
Indubitably. I mean, it really is. And then obviously that has never, that's not been an experience any of us have ever had again since as an adult, but it was nice to dream for a little bit. One other Laker memory that I have to mention was watching the Lakers Trailblazers. I've only been to two or three Lakers games in person. I went to a random one, I think against the Nuggets. I took my wife just because we found out, oh, Tyler's got his ticket stub. Hold on, I'm screenshotting that to send to Brian. I love that it has home court advantage on it in quotes. That's so funny.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
The
says Lakers, the ticket was $5. Hilarious. Anyway, keep going. You
literally can't park for less than 20 at this point. but yeah, the Lakers Trailblazers game, the alley-oop, the Kobe to Shaq alley-oop, of games I've watched on TV, probably my single favorite moment. Watch it with our friend Ryan. We were, I think I was a senior in high school. I think he just graduated. And we just like ran outside and
yes.
I mean, I probably burned 1,000 calories in the, you know, half hour after that. I mean, we just were going absolutely nuts.
We were having one of our classic backyard barbecues with everybody from the neighborhood that day. And when that play happened, you could hear people down the street, around the corner, like everyone at the same time was reacting. And as I was watching the game on Sunday, as the Lakers were beating the Heat, I was thinking, every person is watching this at a different time. Because if you have a streaming service, you know, maybe it buffers for a little bit longer than somebody else or whatever. So those experiences of an entire neighborhood watching a game and seeing it come live at the same time all together, those things are things of the past. So yeah. When I think of those memories, like you're saying, Mike, like that play or the tip out to Robert Horry for the three at the top, that was another one where you could hear everybody reacting. I'm so happy that we got that because I don't think we'll ever have it again.
I did. I got some fireworks in Long Beach after the championship on Sunday, which was nice. And
only some, huh?
Yeah, I know. It wasn't. I mean, you know, it didn't slap the way it did in 2001, 2002. It was there was just a little something in the air, bro. I mean, it was definitely like either a Laker car flies everywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe we finally burn out all of the firework reserve. You know, we were popping them off for like what 3 months straight. So maybe yeah. The fireworks people were like, man, we really don't have – I mean, I guess it's not probably the best thing to just keep sitting around in a warehouse, you know what I mean? So
it has not historically worked out recently, no.
That is true. Yeah, somebody call Acme. We're going to need to re-up right. our stock because I want fireworks when Long Beach Sports comes back.
Here's
fireworks at every single event, guys, day, night, I don't care.
Hey,
I know we recently did a Jason Brown game, so let me just make this joke. Let's wait till halftime, Lakewood. What do you say?
Here's my question. As you know, JJ's a lifelong Dodger fan. I've been a Dodger fan for about 5 years since I started watching games with my son. How quickly do we transition? I mean, I felt like on Monday watching the Lakers, you know, watching the Dodgers lose, I'm getting stressed out. And I'm like, shouldn't I have been able to celebrate that Lakers championship for a little longer? Like the anxiety is hitting too quickly.
It's why these finals and championships are not supposed to be played at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you happen to live in Southern California and have actually relevant teams in multiple sports, it's very stressful.
You don't even have an off day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you don't even have a day where it's like, all right, no Dodgers today. Let's dive in on the Lakers. I mean, maybe what you could do, I mean, before the game starts or something, or yesterday the game was over in 15 minutes, but you know, maybe it would be good to like, just show clips from the season or something and remember how awesome the Lakers were this year and how much fun it was to watch them, you know, even if it's just like a 3-minute highlight package from one game or right. Just some clips of LeBron and AD. I don't know. That could keep the like, no, we got to enjoy the fact that we actually won, you know, that could be a good idea to show Vinny.
Well, I guess it's not the way we're living though.
I don't know.
I'm just really glad that you guys got that moment, Mike. And I hope that families across the world, Laker fans everywhere, got to share that moment with somebody because it's special, man. And in a year like this, we need special things. Hopefully more to come on this show. What up, Long Beach? Part of our partnership with the Long Beach Post. Hoping to get some more great interviews and more information to you because if you just listen to the show every week, you're going to know everything you need to know about Long Beach sports. So for everybody at the 562.org and Long Beach Post, for Mike, for Tyler, and for JJ, we will see you soon, Long Beach. Stay safe out there.